Good morning. A little bit under the weather, so I'll try and talk loud and hopefully not sneeze or cough at any point. So the title of my presentation is Where Are They? The Challenges of Using Venue Time-Based Sampling Methods in HIV Prevention Research with Heterosexual Black Men. The reason why I titled it this is because Where Are They? Was one of the phrases that we said almost every single day when we were outside recruiting, and that's just how I think of our entire recruitment process. So I have no disclosures. So just an overview of what we're going to talk about today is just to discuss the VBT sampling method, explain a little bit about the Represent Project, as well as talking about some of the great stuff about VBT and some of the challenges that we faced, and just some future implications related to that. So why heterosexual black men? I think we've kind of seen this in some of the previous presentations, so I won't stay on this too long. But just to say that heterosexual black men have become sort of the forgotten group when it comes to HIV prevention research. And in Philadelphia, they are playing a big role in the HIV/AIDS cases, and they really need to be represented in our research. And they're also a hard-to-reach population, considered a hard-to-reach population. And taking that into consideration, when you're doing recruitment, there's certain, factors you need to take into account when working with hard-to-reach populations, and I think it's important to really discuss this when we're talking about our recruitment method so we can find the best means of recruitment when working with heterosexual black men. So why VBT? We chose VBT because it is a sampling method that has been used with hard-to-reach populations, mainly MSM, when it comes to HIV prevention research, MSM being men that have sex with men. And it has been successfully used. There are not too many studies that I know of that have used it with heterosexual black men. I know there's one currently going on in Florida that's using it. And we just thought that this would be a good mechanism to use for our project and to see how it went. And really look at it from a methodological standpoint to see does it really work when using it outside the MSM community. So a little bit about the Represent study. It was a 3-year NIH-funded study at Drexel University. Lisa Bolig was the principal investigator. And the goal of the study was to look at heterosexual black men and their sexual HIV/AIDS risk and how it's related to things such as structural factors, gender role norms, sexual scripts, and things of that nature. For the majority of the study, I was actually the recruitment coordinator, hence why I'm doing this presentation, but I'm currently the project director for the study. Okay, so our recruitment-related research questions were, in general, we just wanted to see if this type of sampling really did work for us. Really look at what were the strengths and what were the challenges, and be sort of transparent about what those challenges were, because that's one of the things that I found is sort of missing from the literature. Everyone wants to say how great our sampling went, but no one wants to say what were the challenges. And some of the things that we faced, it was like throughout the entire process was, I wish I would have known this before we started. We could have addressed this from the beginning if someone would have just said, hey, you might want to think about this before you choose this form of sampling. And so two of the main things we were looking at was some of the methodological challenges, and as well as cost effectiveness, because that was definitely one of the things I felt like was lacking from the literature. So just a little bit about VBT. There's three main phases that go on with VBT sampling. So the first part is formative research. So this involves canvassing the area, seeing what venues are out there, taking really good notes, and then site contacting. Site contacting is where you go to the venues that are considered viable venues. With our research project, we had an enumeration process to determine what was a viable venue. So pretty much if we saw two men that appeared to be black heterosexual men within a half an hour period, then I guess I'd see 8 in 2 hours and so on and so forth. And then after the site contacting, that's when you get venues to say either yes or no, whether you can recruit there. You move on to the sampling frame development. And this is where you pick two-hour sampling event times, venue times, which are two-hour blocks of time, where they're identified by the day and a good time to come. And you have multiple ones for each venue. And we do that based on recommendations from the venue owners, the notes that we took during our canvassing and site contacting, and also just things such as safety and, all that general stuff. And then you use this to come up with a randomized, pretty much monthly calendar for recruitment. So we did 20 sampling events a month. So it would be five Black groups that we use, and we used the Black groups that we use, I even see were 50% or more African American based on census data. And then we moved on to actually conducting the sampling events, so the recruitment, where we sent out our teams of recruiters, two or three at a time. They would go to the venues, approach men, ask them were they willing to be screened, do the screening on the spot. If they were deemed to be eligible, they received a study card and gave some basic contact information, and then they can come into our represent study office, which was at Drexel University, and come and take the survey, the ACASI survey, at our office and get their incentives. So the eligibility criteria was to identify as Black or African American, report having had vaginal sex in the last 2 months, be between 18 to 44, born and live in Philadelphia, and our cash incentive was $50. That's a lot of money. So basically our recruitment results were we ended up having 53 different Black groups in Philadelphia. And so this was all across Philadelphia, so it could have been north, south, west. And our site content, we ended up using 88 assenting venues, and this lasted a little, like almost about a year. And as far as our formative research, the canvassing and the site contacting lasted a little more than a year as well. And just to give you an idea of the type of venues that we ended up using, the majority of them were corner stores, with some barbershops and restaurants. So our basic recruitment results were, this you can see, how it kind of funnels down from the number of men that you were actually seeing at the venue to the number that we were actually able to get into our represent office, and the kind of bottom line that we could use their data. So we saw over 2,000 men at the venues. And again, you're not able to approach everyone. So if I'm currently doing a screening right here, it's hard to get someone that's walking across the street. So we got a lot of them. And then the men that agreed, and then you can see the men that were actually eligible, which was pretty good. But then it's right there at the last two numbers. Why do we have so many men that were deemed eligible, but we weren't able to get enough of them into the office to actually take the survey? So while 53%, that rate is, when you look at response rates for a lot of studies dealing with African-American males, it's not that terrible in comparison. But you still would like to see it higher, because if we have so many men that are eligible, what do we need to do to get more of them to actually come to take the survey? So that's what we're going to talk about. So this is just to give you an idea of the men that actually participated. And I guess the key things I want to point out there were they were relatively low income, unemployed, and lower education level. So some of the challenges that we face. I've grouped them into four main areas, which dealt with staffing, venues, response rates, and retention, and the cost effectiveness. So staffing. The first dilemma we dealt with was whether or not to hire recruiters as full-time or part-time. We chose to go with part-time just because with the randomization of the sampling frame, you end up having some weeks where you may have 6, 7, 8, 9 sampling events and others where you have one. So to hire a full-time staff and not actually have the work for them to do on a regular basis didn't make sense on a cost-wise and just in general. So we chose to have part-time staff. And the nature of having part-time staff, as you know, tends to have a high turnover rate. So when you have things like that coming in, there's constant turnover, retraining, and it also brought on safety concerns. When we didn't have enough staff, you can't send out one person to recruit. You have to have at least 2 to 3 at a time. And when you're trying to handle things like reschedules, you end up pushing things back further and further just because you don't have the availability. And so we ended up having, over the course of the study, about 11 recruiters throughout the duration. And we kept about 6 on staff at a time. But when you have someone that leaves because they're going to school or they've gotten a full-time job, it just makes things a little bit difficult. And it would be nice to have full-time staff where you know you always have someone available to handle your sampling events, but it just didn't work out that way. And then you can see that for the number of reschedules that we had to do out of our 179 sampling events, 33% of them were because of staffing conflicts. Our next challenge was actually the venues. So one of the differences between our research and what we have seen with VBT and the MSM community is that it's a very venue dispersed community. So there are not, in the MSM research, they were able to use things such as LGBTQ clubs, events, things of that nature, where they're part of the LGBT community, whereas we didn't have that same great luxury. So we used our enumeration process to sort of go out into the community to find these venues. But then we were faced with different challenges. So things such as the safety concerns. There was a number of times where we actually had to set in place a procedure for safety concerns, whether it was police activity at the venue, witnessing illegal activity at the venue. How do you handle that? When do you know when to leave? Like, what are the proper procedures on how to handle that? That became a big part of our training process. And then also with the majority of our venues being corner stores, a lot of them are non-native English speakers that are owning these corner stores. So being able to communicate with the venue owners. So while one day you may come in and have a worker that can help translate, when you come back to actually do the recruitment, is that worker still going to be there to help you and things of that nature? And making sure that the venue owners really understood the work that we were going to be doing at their venue. We weren't taking advantage of them. I know when we usually walk into the store, I know we have a couple of our staff here. They can tell you when we walk in, we say, oh, we're from Drexel School of Public Health. All they heard was health department. And everything was shut down from there. So even just that communication with the venue owners. And then also dealing with the retention of the venues. So since we did our formative research, and it took us about a year to do our canvassing and site contacting, and then you have this randomized schedule, you may have been site contacted in July of 2008, but then we wouldn't actually come to recruit just based on our randomized calendar until maybe almost a year later. So in the economic climate that we were in, dealing with some of these smaller venues, we had venues that would have closed by then. Changes in management that have moved, and all types of these little annoyances that we didn't see coming, but that really did affect our list of venues, and we considered having to go back out and find more venues to make sure that we can get the sample size that we need. And I know the one thing that I would do differently, I think, would have been to maybe go in cohorts. So get a cohort of venues, go ahead and recruit at those venues, and then go back out and do the site contacting and the canvassing over again in another set of block groups. So again, one of those things I wish we would have known before we started. All right. And also, I think this is a good point to talk about this, like just the logistics of having our CASI survey at our office rather than on site. Ideally, we would have loved so that as soon as the men were screened, if they wanted to take their CASI survey, they could have hopped on some sort of van or truck, taken it on the computer, gotten their incentives, and left. However, with the safety issues that we were dealing with, it just didn't seem like a smart move to have to figure out the logistics of having computers and cash in a car or in a truck in some of these neighborhoods, whereas some of our recruiters, like we kept constant notes of this, just them having a briefcase was often questioned, had to get in the habit of being able to open the briefcase and show it's just paperwork, nothing else in there. We've had recruiters have their briefcase stolen on the way to venues, things like that. So while we would, like I know in some other studies that they were able to actually do the survey on site, it just didn't seem like an option for us in the neighborhoods that we were dealing with. And just the response rate and retention. So as you can see from these numbers, I'm not going to spend too much time. If the guys weren't coming in within the first 2 weeks, they probably weren't coming in. So just taking that into consideration, you really need to think about what you can do to get the men in as soon as possible, because the longer the time goes on, the chances of them coming in are less likely. So we did do things such as follow-up phone calls and emails. So men were asked to either give a phone number or email address. If they didn't come in within the first couple days, they were contacted up to three times, and we kept detailed notes on what would happen during those contactings. But again, I just would have loved if we could have done it on site. And one of the things that we considered was a lot of our venues, we did our recruitment outside. This was mainly because of we asked, when we would come for site contacting, we would ask the venue owners, would you prefer if we recruit inside or outside? And with these little corner stores, 9 times out of 10, they said outside. So if we were able to recruit inside, that may change the logistics a little bit of maybe being able to have one computer there and at least have one computer just in case a few men want to take the Akasi right then and there rather than having to come to our office to take it. And I also, one of the next things I would like to do, hopefully, is to look at which men actually came into the office. Was it the men that were at venues that were closer to our office rather than further away? And whether that made a difference in men actually coming in, but that's a next step in our data analysis. And so cost effectiveness. Mind you, this number does not include the cost that we spent as far as transportation overhead, but basically it looks at the money that we spent for hours for our recruiters, whether that was for formative research, recruiting, training hours, and things of that nature, and $50 incentives. Now, this looks relatively low in what you will see in some of studies with other ethnic minority research. However, like I said, I did leave out the transportation costs because we're still kind of figuring that out, exactly how much that did cost per person. But the one thing I would say is, kind of the take-home message for this cost-effectiveness slide is that most of the research with VBT does not talk about the cost-effectiveness of the method. I couldn't find it anywhere. And we ended up going over budget in certain areas as far as we didn't realize it was going to take us this many hours to do the canvassing and the site contacting and things of that nature. And sort of encouraging other researchers to have the same transparency, because this affects how you even line up your budget when you choose to do this method of sampling. And promise and future implications. The VBT sampling did work for us. We were able to get 581 men, 578 of them we were able to use for data analysis. We would love to see maybe a couple hundred more, but we were able to get a sample size that was working for us for data analysis, so that's good enough for me. But at the same time, I think one of the biggest things as a recruitment coordinator that I thought was awesome was having this relationship with these venue owners that we can use them as a vehicle for our study data dissemination later on. We already have this relationship built in where we can send out the information, and most of them were very excited about the idea of it. And so were the men as well. And for future implications, I do think that VBT sampling is a good method that can be used with hard-to-reach populations, but just to take into consideration the difference that you'll experience when you're working in an urban community or working with a venue dispersed community, and that there will be things that will come up as far as staffing and weather and safety. For the weather part, we just didn't see that coming. But because we were recruiting outside, I think 58% of our reschedules were due to weather. So in Philadelphia, when you recruited across a year, we went from having one of our worst winters ever to having one of our hottest summers. So besides just recruiters not wanting to go out there, you also have to consider that even if you do send your recruiters out there, are men going to be willing to stop? Because that was one thing that we did face, especially when it was really cold. So even if you're seeing the men, they're not willing to stop, even for 2 minutes, to get screened. Or if it's too hot, a lot of people aren't just hanging outside. So is it cost effective to keep sending your team out there on these days? So because they're willing to deal with it, and that was one of the things they agreed to when they got hired, is it still worth it to send them out there if the men aren't going to be willing to stop and actually be screened? Also encourage in future research to present both the descriptive and the analytical data. I did see a lot of descriptive data and not as much analytical data on the methods and just the challenges and the cost effectiveness, and I really think we need to introduce that into our recruitment literature to be transparent, so we can help future researchers when they're deciding on what methods they want to use and preparing for what they may face, and sort of building in whether it is building in a weather and a safety guidelines before they start the study, rather than it being something that you're sort of throwing in halfway through when you've been pushed up against the wall because it's been snowing for 2 weeks. And I just wanted to acknowledge my recruitment staff, both in-house and my soldiers that were out on the streets when it was snowing, raining, and whatever. And we actually have two of them here today. You guys want to stand up? Of course you don't. because my references. And thank you. Short and sweet.